Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
Set your watches every week. Rich Casanova over here, the host for Buckhead Business Radio X. We were actually broadcasting live from our beautiful Buckhead studio here at Peachtree Offices with this amazing million-dollar view. I don't know why I mentioned the view. We're on radio, right?
Yeah. But it is a wonderful view.
Absolutely. I need to come on down and check it out. So we got a great lineup of guests here this morning in the studio and kind of winding down 2014, looking forward to 2015. And Ryan, you're joining us here in the studio as our co-host here this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Doing great. Yeah, like you said, getting wrapped up here on 2014. It's been a great year, not only for me personally, but Buckhead Business Radio X.
Yeah, absolutely. And then she had a pretty easy commute with the holidays kind of kicking in now,
right? Not too bad.
And but speaking of that, so you started October, I think it was, as our intern here at the studio.
That's right.
Kind of ramped up at taking on more responsibilities as assistant producer engineer. So
yes, sir. Thank you.
Really appreciate your help.
Looking forward to 2015 and getting involved more with our great guests as we have here in the studio today.
Absolutely. We have a great lineup. And speaking of that, so Ryan, who do we have joining us?
First we'll introduce, just briefly, Mr. Ian Mendelson. Tell us who you're with, sir.
I own Vine and Tap, a wine bar in Buckhead.
Vine and Tap. Very good. Seated next to him in studio today, Don Schwartzel. Hello. Good morning, sir.
Good
Is
morning.
Is that close
Does
enough?
That say right?
Well, you got Don right.
Please say your name properly for us.
Schwartzler.
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 Schwartzler. And who are you with, sir?
I'm with the Family Business Institute and our web organization, familybusinessexperts.com.
Okay. Looking forward to hearing more about that as the show progresses. Seated next to him, to his left, is Jane Turner. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Who are you with? And
I'm with the Children's Museum of Atlanta. We're located downtown Atlanta on Centennial Olympic Park.
Children's Museum of Atlanta.
Did Ryan pronounce your name correctly? Yeah.
Yes, Turner.
Sorry. Okay.
Sorry, buddy.
No problem. That's all right. And then right to her left is Mr. Johnny Esposito.
Junior.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning,
Junior.
Guys.
That's right. Don't want to forget
Thanks
that.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Pleasure to have you here.
Great.
So yeah, great lineup. And so stay tuned for all of our guests and interesting, compelling stories to share here this morning. We're going to kick things off with Johnny Esposito, Jr. Right?
Correct,
and
correct.
So a little bit about your background. Some folks in Atlanta probably know the name. Your family's been in the hospitality industry for nearly a half century, but not
correct.
You, though, right?
Yes, yes. No, I was born into it, so I think my dad put me to work right away.
Nice. Yeah, we want to hear about those early jobs. But you're the son of the late entertainer, entertainment and nightlife leader. Most people have founded the legendary Johnny's Hideaway. Raise your hand if you've been at Johnny's Hideaway, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. All of Atlanta.
Everybody, yeah. Now you're spearheading a new project opening in Buckhead, Buckhead Tavern, with restaurant guru Ron Barber.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
And that actually happens, is it tomorrow night? Is the official kind of the pre-VIP opening? Or
correct. We teamed up with the Reynolds Group. We're really excited to be a part of. And we were launching our VIP party. We have about 300 guests coming to sort of showcase our product and got some dynamite entertainment to let Atlanta know what we're all about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit more into the interview here. But so talk us about the background. Actually, before we get into Buckhead Tavern, I mean, it's kind of your story is starting with your dad, right?
Correct.
So what was your first responsibilities there?
Well, Dad started. He came to Atlanta. He had a Johnny's Hideaway in Cocoa Beach in 1966.
Really?
That's the original. I was born in 67 in Cocoa Beach. All the Cape Canaveral, all the astronauts would hang out there next to Ron John. So he sort of brought that concept to Atlanta a few years later in the late 70s and sort of got that project off the ground. And he had one of the original concepts in Buckhead in 1977. So, you know, he sort of trended with that, sort of went with the times and had about 15 clubs here in Atlanta over the years.
Well, I was born in Miami. Everybody migrated to Melbourne.
Yep, yep.
Was there for the first launch at the Cape and then a lot of and Ron John's. Wow, what a story that is, right? Yeah. Now they're like three levels, open 24 hours.
I know, it's crazy. I was just down there and when he had passed, they did a live remote radio and just sort of reminiscent of the... You know, there was always a thing. The astronauts took a bumper sticker from Johnny's Hideaway to the moon with them. So,
very nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah, fun stuff. So.
Wow, that's cool stuff, man. Yeah. Okay, so fast forward now. You've been in that business, but now what's the inspiration behind Buckhead Tavern? And what's the idea there?
You know, I had a few concepts in Duluth back at about 15 years ago, and I sort of got excited about bringing some modern food. I was always in that comfort food Italian. That was sort of Esposito's was an Italian restaurant I had. And we were very successful in Duluth and had a great clientele base. And I was sort of excited to get back into the area where I grew up in with sort of trending with the times with the food now. And, you know, really excited about this concept and the artists and entertainment that I have working with me. Have been a part of my concepts in the past, so definitely excited to sort of blend them all together.
And when we have restaurants here, we always put them on the spot, like no food, no samples. But you're off the hook because you're not officially open.
Correct. Right? Yeah, I was going to send something.
Next time, though. Next time,
I say Ian's got some products.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Nice.
You will be compensated.
There you go. Nice. Okay, so so talking about food and talk to us about some of the menu highlights and what you're expected.
You know, we're doing a braised short rib, fresh lettuce wraps. Nicole has really put this product together that I was really excited about. She's a vegetarian herself, so she really is a really health nut guru, and I was sort of like, that's what's happening now. I wanted it comfortable where people can come see me a couple days a week and not worry about their waistline. So
I thought at first you said Braves ribs.
Braised ribs.
But that'd be a good one, though. Yes. A little play on words there. Braves. There I don't know if they'd sign off on that. Or
I don't know about that.
It might be some dollars, some license royalty. It might be a little pricey.
Yes,
well,
sir.
No, you just charge extra. That's an upgrade for the ribs. If you want the Braves ribs, that's going to, yeah.
Gotta promote them this year, 2015.
Nice. So so now we're talking dinner, or what's the lineup? Is it going to be?
You know, we have a lot. We're heavy on the salads. We're definitely appetizers. We're very share family-oriented, where
nice.
A lot of groups sort of get together, Buckhead, and sort of figure out their evening. And we wanted people to be comfortable to come in and meet their friends, have a nice glass of wine, have some shareable items. We're doing lettuce wraps. We're doing, obviously, baked wings. We're doing, she's got some bok choy on there. We're doing a fresh chicken avocado quesadillas, a turkey brie with a cranberry chutney quesadilla.
Oh, man.
It's almost lunchtime, isn't it, Rich?
Exactly. Yeah. Let's cut out early. You know where we're heading. Yeah.
Definitely some exciting stuff to try. So.
Now, that shareables, you got to be careful, though, who you order that with, because I'll just have a little bite of that, and then you turn around, and it's gone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So just dinner, or are you also doing lunch?
We're doing lunch and dinner, okay. And then we're going to do a Sunday brunch coming soon as well, too.
Nice. You got the whole lineup there. So now talk to us about Ron Barber. What does he bring to the table?
Ron is my partner. We worked together years ago at another concept in Roswell, and he had the location, and he contacted me and said, you know, let's team up, and I have the location, and you have the knowledge and experience, and let's sort of put it together and make this happen.
Now, when I got the alert, I think I got it from Brave PR and about the announcement for the event, and I was surprised that was it from Brave PR or yes? Mm. No,
the Reynolds Group.
I'm sorry. I was thinking the Braves or whatever. Yeah, so from Reynolds Group. I knew there was a silence in the room. Everybody would give me the eye like, really? Did he just say that? Yeah, from the Reynolds Group. I apologize. But from the Reynolds Group, and I got the alert for the opening, I thought, Buckhead Tavern, they're reopening or what's the deal? But I'm surprised there was never an establishment with that name. I mean,
you know, we sort of did the history on this. Henry Irby founded Buckhead, you know, in the late teen years, obviously, it's founded in the location, and there was actually an original Buckhead Tavern in, 1930-something. So we sort of wanted to go the history of Buckhead and sort of collaborate with my father's, you know, many years in the industry, and then sort of just make it happen. It's something easy and
the great, you know, name. I was just surprised, like you said.
I was surprised it was available, too.
Right. That would be the first one I would choose if I was going to open up a place. I mean, sounds like it's already been there.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
So outside of the menu, it sounds delicious already. What other things are you going to be offering? Music?
You know, we're doing live music. We have Chris Colley, who was on The Voice last year. James David Carter, soon to come. You know, just some Wesley Cook, a lot of local artists that are great. Gareth Asher. I'm looking at Peter from Naked Eyes, the lead singer there, to come do acoustic. Kevin Kenny, we're working on.
Oh, yeah, Driving a Crying.
You know, and just sort of collaborate and bring some really simple stuff locally where people in the area can really walk and enjoy themselves and be a part of the new Buckhead growth.
That's great. Love to hear that. So local music, local flavor. Any particular night of the week you're going to feature that on?
Thursday through Saturday for entertainment.
So several nights a week.
Correct.
You can go to Buckhead Tavern and see live music and enjoy a great menu, it sounds like.
Yes.
That's
looking
very
forward
good.
To having
very
everybody
good.
Out.
So you're hoping it to be a to-go kind of place for people, not only for dining, but for music as well.
Exactly.
And that's
correct.
Part of your design?
Yes, sir.
Good, good. So I'm sure people will be reaching out to you and wanting to visit very soon. And so as a professional and been in the industry for so many years, you know, what are some things you would like to see more of or less of in the restaurant menus these days?
You know, I think it's I eat out a lot, so I'm definitely gearing towards the healthier side of items because, you know, that's sort of what I'm excited about. I know True Foods here is really exciting here in the area. So, you know, we're sort of going trendy with the times. I mean, people are trying to, you know, be affordable as well, mm-hmm. too. I mean, you know, to go have a couple glasses of wine and we're not going to hit your pocket, you know, so.
Yeah, good. So healthy options, live music.
Affordable cocktails.
Affordable cocktails, affordable menu. You got it going on big time over
there,
it sounds
sir.
Like.
Yes, sir.
Very good. And so outside of the Buckhead Tavern, is there anything else that you're kind of working on or want to share with our listeners?
You know, I grew up also, too. I opened the Punchline in 1982. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of local comic artists that I've worked with over the last 30 years that mm-hmm. are in town. I have a lot of them coming through. So I'm excited to have them, you know, to come. They're always excited about seeing what projects I'm working on. So they're definitely going to come through and eat dinner with me and, you know, have a familiar face in the building. So that's going to be exciting, too. And we're doing a thing with Ron White with his new tequila. Numero One.
Yes,
so
sir.
He's going to come do a bottle sighting we're working on as well.
So maybe some comedians on there on those nights out there, I guess.
Is that Sandy Springs? The
Punchline.
Punchline
correct.
Sandy
yes,
Springs?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Off near Hammond, but it's
Hildebrand.
Hildebrand, correct.
We actually, our first show for, I think it was our Atlanta Legal Experts show, our law show on Tuesday mornings at 8. We had Jamie.
Yep, Jamie Bender. Bendel.
Yeah.
Yep, he
was
is the owner. Yes, sir.
Yeah, he has a trip, but he's a practicing attorney.
Yeah, he's amazing. Him and Chris DePetta had bought it from my friends Ron and Dave, and they've really carried the torch on and done an amazing job. And it's exciting that they still let me have the access from my earlier days.
So anything official on the comedy, or is that just kind of like on the, you know, in the works, or is it going to be a certain schedule or whatever?
You know, we're going to just have them coming through and have dinner. I've always sort of pushed the envelope with that, but I'm sort of going to leave it to those guys in the improv. You know, they do a great job with it. So it's good to be able to have them to come to town and, you know, with all these longevity relationships to really have them, you know, come check me out and, you know, tell some stories that we've got a lot of road stories. So
that's nice.
And so you mentioned your chef, Nicole, right?
Mention
again how you came to work with her and what she brings to the table.
You know, we've known each other for probably about 25 years, and I knew she was in the private sector of home cooking. She's a personal chef, and I was sort of working with another chef as well, too, Chef Dean, which is amazing. He opened some House of Blues. So I sort of geared towards her because I felt that that location sort of needed to be trending what's happening in the area. So I think her healthier aspect of the food items and everything is made in-house. I mean, the dressings, the sauces, we're cooking our own turkeys off. I mean, there's nothing processed. There's nothing pre-sliced. It's just you know, it may take a couple minutes to get the product out, but it's going to be a definitely healthier and better product.
Very good, very good. And with New Year's Eve coming up and soon opening, any plans for that night?
You know, I'm working with Gareth Asher and the Earthlings. He's amazing. He's got some videos out now, and you know, so we're trying to lock that down as well too. So
awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that and many more exciting things coming from you and the Buckhead Tavern coming up next year. Please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you or find out more information about Buckhead Tavern.
Great. We're at 264 Far Road Northeast. And our website is www.thebuckheadtavern.com.
Thebuckheadtavern.com.
For the locals on Far Road, what's a landmark or what's a intersection or nearby?
Directly across the street from the fish market.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
There you go.
Which
very
I
good.
Saw Nico the other day.
Yeah,
and
yes.
I grew up with that family, and my dad was very close to Pano. So I'm really excited to be close by those folks because they've done just a remarkable projects here in Atlanta over there.
Yeah,
well,
Nico
too.
Was in on our 2 o'clock. The
Simply Buckhead, 2 p.m. Yeah, he was in here just a couple weeks ago. New,
and not to put you on the spot, but we've toyed around with the idea of creating a new show, looking for underwriter sponsors, but for Georgia, we call it Georgia Food and Beverage Radio, right? So bring on all these folks, what's going on in Atlanta with Georgia, you know, Food and Beverage Radio.
But
so
not we'll, only we'll Atlanta, talk. But Buckhead is such a hot spot for restaurants here today.
Yeah, I heard. I think I read it in the Buckhead Guide, but like, what is it? 10 of the top 13. Restaurants in all of Metro Atlanta right here in Buckhead. So this is a place to come and dine and eat and party and have a good time. And started out at the Buckhead Tavern.
Exactly. Yeah. We love it. Nice. It's people like yourselves to help get the exposure for people like all of us here in the room today to get that exposure. So thank you guys as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. We'll come back to you, time permitting, to learn more about what's going on there. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to our next guest, Jane Turner. Good morning.
Good morning.
She is Executive Director of the Atlanta Children's Museum of Atlanta, and you've been holding that position since September of 2004.
That's right.
During that time, she's led the work to become a key organization, reaching approximately 200,000 visitors per year.
That's an
amazing number. And thousands of additional children and families through their outreach and community programs. Under the leadership, the museum has enhanced its physical exhibits and expanded programs addressing cognitive, social, and emotional development in children ages 0 to 8. So it's a learning place as well, it sounds like. That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about the Children's Museum of Atlanta.
Well, we are right downtown. We were probably the first place like that to open on Centennial Olympic Park. We were open before the aquarium, World of Coke. So the neighborhood has changed dramatically, but it is a place that welcomes families, school groups, anyone and everyone. Young children learn through play, so we have an environment that really encourages child-led activities and exploration.
Excellent. And so how did it get its start? How did it become?
Well, while it opened in 2003, it actually had its start back in about 1988, and it started the way a lot of children's museums start, which is a grassroots movement, as if you will. Parents will be in another city, they'll go to a children's museum, then they come back to their city and go, hey, we need one. So that's what happened. It took a while to really get it going, but it was a passionate group, and so the museum actually opened in 2003.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the Children's Museum of Atlanta different than a traditional museum?
Well, a traditional museum, if you think of a traditional museum, you'll imagine the velvet ropes and, and don't touch. That is the exact opposite of what the Children's Museum is. The Children's Museum is please touch, must touch, jump on, twist, turn, throw. We jokingly say we welcome 200,000 visitors a year to come and destroy property.
So I'm in, whatever you ask.
But it is through that hands-on experience that children really, really, really learn and are able to imagine.
What are some of those exhibits those children get their hands on?
Well, we have what we call learning zones. They're really galleries, if you will, but we have we explore things like farm to table. That's a really important concept, especially children in a city. A lot of times they have absolutely no idea where their food comes from. So they can visit a farm, they can harvest food, they can milk a cow, ride the tractor, and then end up at a grocery store. So it follows food from the farm to the store to a pretend house where kids can play. So there are places for kids to explore things like there's a crane, a big ball machine that uses the six simple machines. There's a sand table, painting, fishing, you name it, it's there. And we bring in traveling exhibits that allow us to introduce new topics for learning and play.
So you've got some modern technology built into some of the old traditional kind of professions that kids can learn about and really get hands-on experience. Tell us some more about the power of play and how children learn so much from experiencing that.
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of research on it, although if you really just ask anyone, play is absolutely critical to brain development, to figuring out the things you're learning and memorizing in school, for example. You really put to practice through play and through hands-on exploration. So it's actually linked to brain development and sort of the executive functioning, not to get too scientific, but it's really important for kids to be able to learn how to problem solve. I mean, and if you just think about it, if you can really put your hands on something, you can figure out.
I think some adults can learn from that as well. You know, as we get older, we play less and less, and we should encourage more play As well as work, of course, as we get older.
Well, just imagine doing nothing but getting up, going to work, coming home, and going to sleep with no recreation.
Boring.
So, oh, there's other options? I just had an aha moment.
Please tell us a little more about yourself and how you became to begin working with the Children's Museum of Atlanta.
Well, my journey actually started in corporate America, which is interesting, and I was in Washington, D.C., working for a healthcare technology company. Exactly. No.
Yeah, I don't see the tie-in just yet. Please continue.
There really isn't. We moved here in 1992, and I got involved with a theater here, Georgia Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, yes.
Got very involved in on their board, participated in fundraising, and got very connected to the arts community of Atlanta, and mm-hmm. it is a very rich one. Mm-hmm. A lot going on, and really passionate about it. So the position at the Children's Museum just kind of came along, and it was a real fit at that point.
Great, yes. Very good.
So what type of exhibits are we talking about in the learning zones?
Well, we have, like I said, the farm to table, we have exploration, we have a stream where kids can fish.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a lot of climbing. There's a sand table and a paint table and dancing and tap dancing. And there's just a whole lot of going on. Right now, we bring three feature exhibits each year to the museum. And right now, the one that is being featured is called Outside the Box.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I saw a note about that. So how does that kind of play into... tell the listeners about that. Describe that.
Well, we decided to try something out, which is the children love the box more than the gift that's inside, and we decided to run with that.
Well, unless it's empty or whatever, they're like, really?
So we have filled a gallery with boxes of all shapes and sizes, square boxes, rectangular boxes, refrigerator size boxes, tiny boxes.
Wow. Pizza boxes?
Every box. And what we see, kids come in and we watch things emerge, buildings, forts, cars, you name it. Kids are creating. They know just what to do.
So it kind of teaches them engineering, but
engineering. We have other types of building equipment there in addition to the boxes, and we have something called a makerspace, which is our first step in participating in a movement that is really kind of sweeping the country, which is people making stuff, which is
like making more specifically.
Well, for example, kids last month, which was November, we themed the months, and we had a theme called Boxes of Beauty. Kids were invited to come in and decorate boxes, fill them with toiletry articles, and all of the boxes were gathered, hundreds of boxes that were decorated, and donated to Boxes of Beauty, which provides these types of things for kids who live in homeless shelters.
Yeah. Speaking of kids in boxes, I'm a huge fan of Shark Tank, and I remember there was an episode where the kids were on there, and they had this kid, and he just took these plain boxes, but he would sell like these decals and stickers, and then they would create these trains, and they'd get inside the box and run around inside the box, and everybody's, you know, you're thinking this isn't going to go. They got into a bidding war, and he got a big offer from one of the sharks. So, there's definitely something about kids in boxes. But what about technology? I mean, is there applications there?
Absolutely. And we have a space in that exhibit with computer stations set up where kids can design their own homes, their own creations. So wow. We use technology insofar as it enhances the experience. So kids are not sitting there with a mouse kind of playing at the computer station necessarily.
So what about, that's not really, we didn't talk about this beforehand, but just kind of curious, what about, you know, cost or mm-hmm. how long do the kids stay there typically, or give us a visual picture, like square footage, or what size are we talking about?
Museum, the exhibit area of the museum is about 16,000 square feet.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It costs $12.75 to come per person if you're over the age of one and under the age of 100. kids over 100 can.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have
no comment.
We're open every day of the week except for Wednesday. We're closed to
but on Sundays?
Sundays, okay. every day, mm-hmm. except Wednesdays. And we are just open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. during the week until 5 p.m. on the weekend. For those who find it hard to afford the price of admission, we have one day per month that is free to the public.
Oh, cool.
Thanks to a sponsorship from Target.
Oh, nice.
So the second Tuesday of each month from 1 until 6 is free to the public, and we see a lot of people come.
I love
second
that
second Tuesday every month of every month, free, mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. the Children's Museum of Atlanta.
See, mm-hmm. I'd be there, but we do Tuesday shows or whatever, so I guess I'll have to pay if I go.
$12.75, yeah. You can afford it, Rich.
All right, so... and finally, what about visitors? What do they expect the rest of the year upcoming? You mentioned there's theme months. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the, maybe not all 12 months, what are some upcoming themes, some highlights?
Well, this month is a month of holidays, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
And so we celebrate all the holidays that we are aware of.
Right.
But including New Year's Eve, we have a program for called Noon Year's Eve, and that's the one Wednesday we will be open. So kids can come, and at noon,
the celebration at the crack of noon, right?
The crack
the
of
count
noon.
It down. That's, I might do that. As you get older, that's not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all.
And we have our own brand of special fireworks that I'll just say are not fire hazards at all, but it is kind of a fireworks. But that has become really popular.
Very unique.
Yeah. But we will be celebrating, of course, Hanukkah and Christmas, Kwanzaa. And right now we have the North Georgia Tin Plate Trackers are there with their model trains through the 20th of this month. And they are just fabulous.
What about celebrating Festivus? Remember that from Seinfeld or whatever, right?
For the
rest of us?
That will be at the other
that
Children's
Museum. That way you
cover
everything, yeah. All right, so Jane, so tell our listeners the best way to get in touch with and find out more about the museum.
Our website is www.childrensmuseumatlanta.org. And we are at 275 Centennial Olympic Park Drive. We're right across the street from the World of Coke, catty corner from the Centennial Olympic Park.
I mean, that's a perfect location for that type of venue. So pretty much all those other guys just followed you guys or whatever, right?
They did. So. We take full credit for everything that's happened downtown.
Nice. What about the trolley? Anywhere near the trolley?
Well, we're walking distance from the stop that will... you'd have to walk past Waffle House and then
get some food on the way. Okay. Well, Jane, pleasure having you here. And if time permitting, we'll kind of do a little open panel discussion possibly. And thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
And so up next we have Don S. Now, it's been so long. Remind me of the...
Schwarzler.
I got it. All right, so welcome to the show. And you got quite a long bio. If you don't mind, hit me with some of the bullet points or the... I actually went to your website a couple of times and went to your Facebook page and your website. And so this idea of... I mean, we're going to get into the discussion about family business, the stats involved. And but tell us a little about maybe your background, how this has been in the works for over 40 years now.
Mm-hmm. I started working and studying family business entrepreneurs back in 1967. And as I started working with them, I found that family businesses, the decision-making process is different than other businesses. The business model that's taught at universities and business schools where you have rational problems and rational solutions. In family businesses, it's often rational problems and emotional solutions.
Yeah.
Decisions are made right. not in terms of what's best for the business, but what's best for the family or a particular family member.
And in the early 80s, you organized the Family Business Institute, based here in Atlanta?
Yes, it's the very first family business consulting resource for family businesses exclusively.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because there are a lot of business coaches or consultants or a lot of books written on business, but, you know, that's a very big part of small business, and it's a very unique, right, when you involve all those moving parts in terms of family members. But mm-hmm. So tell us about kind of fast forward. Today there's more than 300 programs?
At colleges and universities.
Wow.
The first one started out at Kennesaw.
Yeah.
And it became the DNA from that program is in most of the college-based family business programs across the country, across the world, actually.
You know, because we, Business Radio, we talk a lot about it. I've had a few businesses in the past, but it is definitely a unique, there's a lot of different aspects to a family business that's much different than a typical,
very difficult to run a family business well, because if you are on our website, you'll see three interconnected circles, and they represent the three major systems that are at play in a family business.
And what are those?
You have the management system, the management of the business system. You have the family system, and you have the ownership system of that business. And those three systems those circles of influence need to be in sync, or you start having problems.
Oh, yeah.
And you have a problem in one of those areas. For instance, the owner gets a divorce. Well, that's going to cascade into the family system. It's going to cascade into the business management system. And so a strategy that is for family businesses is always changing. As a consultant, you always have to be changing your conclusions on what you're looking at, because it's going to be different tomorrow.
Absolutely. And then we're going to get into generations, whatever, and passing on the business. But I want to kind of touch on another point in your bio here before we get into the kind of the questions, if you will. This familybusinessexperts.com, it's a work in progress. I've been to the site. It's tons of information on there, all kinds of content. But I'm just reading this, that last month you registered more than 190,000 page views.
Wow. That's correct.
And talk about how many countries.
Over 100 countries every
That's
month.
That's crazy.
They come to, and I think it underscores the fact that the dynamics of families and business transcends borders and cultures.
Right.
For instance, working with a fourth generation textile distributor in Johannesburg, South Africa. This came to us through this website.
And that's a whole other conversation almost, because when you incorporate cultures, I mean, we think about the American Western civilization and our dynamics of family, functional or dysfunctional, but then you throw in the cultural into the mixing pot, and wow. So let's get into some of the stats here. So what are some of the stats from according to Fortune 500, family businesses? What does that represent?
They're about 30. Yeah, people very often have a wrong perception of what family business is.
Yeah, let's describe that first.
Bit, the dry cleaners or the mom-and-pop restaurant that's in the strip mall type of thing. But 30%, over 30% of the Fortune 500 companies are family-owned businesses. They represent about 60% of the gross domestic product. They create most of the jobs in this country and most of the wealth.
And when you talk about, go back to kind of the definition, if you will, family business. So it's not necessarily if it's a lot of small businesses are privately owned, but maybe nobody in the family works in the business, right? Is that kind
That's one model.
Right.
Those are different.
But would you still qualify as a family? Because you don't have any of the drama or any of the moving parts there if there's not other family members involved.
The two largest sized family businesses that we worked with last year were each doing about $1.2 billion in sales. One was a Canadian company and one was an American company.
And in both cases, they have a number of family.
Yeah, as they evolve, as they grow in size, they tend to become bring in professional managers, and the family becomes shareholder. For instance, Ford is a family-owned business.
Yeah, I was thinking of Ford.
They're not involved in the day-to-day operation, but they do play a significant role in the board of directors.
Yeah, absolutely. talk about generations, succession. What challenges does that represent for family businesses?
Well, it's curious because family businesses are such an important part of the American economy. Yet only about 30% of family businesses successfully transition from the first to the second generation, and only about 12% to the third, and only about 3% to the fourth generation.
And what do you attribute that to?
Poor planning a lot of times. Sometimes the kids don't want to be involved in the business. Sometimes it's a buggy whip business, they haven't taken, change comes slowly to many family businesses.
Right.
And, they're still producing buggy whips, but not like after the car was
delivering ice cube, delivering ice business or whatever. Yeah. If it hasn't evolved or kept up with the times or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
And the younger generation is like they're kind of on to newer shiny objects. Right.
And there's family businesses tend to do a poor job of creating infrastructure. They hire family when they're getting started. They use family members to help grow the business. And so they operate on trust relationships without having a system of checks and balance in the business type of thing, or using professional management people to help run the business or get insights into it. They go to their professional service providers, and they end up getting sequential solutions to their problems. The attorney says one thing, the accountant says another, right. The financial planner says another. And they end up spending a lot of money and not moving the ball forward.
And do you subscribe to this idea that it's I think it still holds true. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the second generation. You know, you have the original, the first generation works hard, you know, day and night to establish a business. Second business kind of respects that because they've seen how difficult and the challenges the folks, the parents have gone through. But a lot of times it's the third generation. They don't really. They've kind of just grown up in everything is hunky dory, and they don't really, I think, have that work ethic and really respect what it takes to. And they end up a lot of times maybe selling the business, right?
Or well, that's what the or putting it. There's the saying what we talk about is from rags to riches right. to rags in only three right. generations. You know.
Yeah, yeah. But it's that third generation. If you get past that hoop. I mean, a lot of the iconic brands that we know of here in America have gone past that. Mm-hmm. But is that probably one of the biggest, not the biggest challenge, but in terms of succession, right? Is that third generation?
Just in terms of the numbers, there's many more first-generation businesses that are dealing with the succession issue.
Yeah.
And then they have a template to go by in the next generation,
yeah, yeah.
the following generation. So it's a little bit easier. But it gets more complex. We talk about the founder of a family business
right.
starting off, and then we talk about in the second generation, we're talking about sibling partnerships. And then the third generation, we're talking about cousin consortiums
right,
because
right.
You know, it's getting exponentially
yeah, everybody
more
wants
complex.
In, especially when there's money flowing or whatever. Yeah, I want in on this, yeah.
The cousins, the nephews, the nieces. So it becomes more complex.
Yeah.
I was wondering along those same lines, why is there so much leadership issues in the transition from one generation to the next?
Well, that's almost there's two different kinds of leadership that comes to play at a family business. One is the transactional leadership, and that's the stuff that goes on every day in running a business. The shipping, the manufacturing, the serving customers. And then there's the transformational leadership, and that's generally we see that we try to instill that in what we call the Nexter generation, the Nexters, mm-hmm. and that has to do with innovation. It's an opportunity to revisit what can that business do differently, or what can it mm-hmm. do better. And sometimes those two kinds of leadership styles clash.
That's right. And the leadership has got to stay in place despite what the product is that you may be producing or service you may be offering.
Mm-hmm.
If that leadership is not there, then you may find yourself in transition once again. So tell me about the new nepotism and how that plays into the family business.
Well, the nepotism generally had a kind of a negative connotation to it type of thing. We talk about kids that may not have what we hope it doesn't offend anybody, we call it a lucky sperm club. Yeah, that they're born into the business type of
okay.
thing.
Okay.
They may not have had to do the work necessary to get a job, and it creates problems with the employees. The new nepotism is more positive, I think. It has to do with the next generation building off what the previous generation is built, not necessarily in that business, but on their reputation and their experience. For instance, Johnny here mm-hmm. Is not in business with his dad per se, but he's partnered with the tradition, the legacy that his father created type of thing, mm-hmm. the reputation. People know that when they're dealing with Johnny, for instance, they're not dealing with somebody that just fell off the watermelon truck.
Mm-hmm.
They knows his business, knows the community, knows the that's what we refer to as the new nepotism, where the family business acts as an incubator mm-hmm. for the next generation to do. We had one client that had five brothers that were partners. They had 19 kids between them. And all of them, each of those dads, each of those brothers had said, you know, someday, kid, this is all going to be yours. So they got 19 kids that want to come into the business. Yeah. But this is a business that's going downhill. You know, and there's no room for it. But we started looking and say, okay, you got a lot of maintenance that's going on with your company. Instead of hiring that maintenance work out, why don't one of your kids start a maintenance company? And that's, you know, $500,000 business with that one customer, and that you can start making other business contacts and customers from that. So,
well, they have to kind of make it scalable so that more people can be involved, but at different locations or,
Sure. One of the daughters had a degree in marketing, and so she ended up doing their advertising, their promotional work type of thing. And that client doesn't have to be the only client, but it's the first client, and they can build their business from that.
Yeah, you can't have 19 family members cooking in the kitchen at Buckhead Tavern or whatever.
No, and do you find that there is a particular industry that family businesses kind of gravitate more?
No, the family businesses are across the board. There are some industries, for instance, the funeral industry is primarily a family business. Mm-hmm. Most distribution businesses are, most construction companies are. Many professional practices, lawyers, you see some advertising on TV that they're talking about their kids being in the business with them, or we have a podiatrist group that's a family business. Generational family business. Definitely.
Well, knowing now that there's over 35% of the Fortune 500 companies are family-run businesses, definitely, personally, I'm going to keep an eye out for that and learned a lot of, about what you have brought to the table here today. Please tell our listeners how they can learn more about your business or yourself or how to get involved.
Well, we invite people to come to our website. It's family-business-experts.com. And or on Twitter, it's Family Biz, B-I-Z, Experts. And we our telephone number here in Atlanta is 770-952-4085.
Thank you very much, and we'll be looking out for that in the future there. So thank you for being a guest on the show today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Patiently waiting, sitting next to him, waiting his turn, is Mr. Ian Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Getting there.
Good.
Getting my coffee this morning.
That's good. Ian is the owner of Vine and Tap, which is right here in the neighborhood. All right?
Right down the street.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Did you walk here? Yeah.
We may have a place for lunch today, Rich.
Nice.
Vine and Tap restaurant opened in Buckhead on Valentine's Day, 2014. You are a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America, and you have worked as a sommelier at Windows on the World and then went on to run the wine department at Christie's Auction House. That's pretty cool.
It was a very cool two places to work.
Yes. Yeah. Did you get to drink some antique wines while there at Christie's?
I'll probably never drink as well as I did for those 4.5 years, ever.
So, and then from there, you moved on to Las Vegas, where you were instrumental in the opening of the Wynn Hotel. Wow, that's a huge place.
It's fun to open a restaurant and a hotel with no budget.
In Vegas, no budget?
Shocking.
In a blank check or just or no money?
Pretty much a blank check.
Okay, yeah.
It's pretty much you work with the chefs and the amazing chefs that Steve brought out for the whole hotel. And you basically work with them building beverage programs. Mm-hmm.
And you know Mr. Wynn personally?
I met him once.
Okay. Well, that's good enough for me. And then you went on to become wine director at the Mirage Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. So you enjoyed that position?
Las Vegas really was an amazing experience in my career. It was really eye-opening. I worked with some amazing front-of-the-house master sommeliers, probably the largest rendition out there. Some incredible chefs. Almost every major chef in the world has an outlet out there. So it's an really amazing place for food and beverage. Mm-hmm.
And then after your time in Las Vegas, you were actually recruited to come here to Atlanta to work at the St. Regis in Buckhead as a wine director.
I did that for about a year.
About a year. And then you went on to the H&F Bottle Shop before opening your own restaurant, as we mentioned, in Valentine's Day of this year. How are things going over there at the Vine and Tap so far?
It's been great. It was when my wife and I opened Vine and Tap and decided on it about 2 years ago. It was a lifelong dream of both of us. My wife's family's from southern Italy. And there wasn't a large segment in the wine bars in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we may as well try.
Right, and so tell us more about Vine and Tap. What sets you apart from the other wine bars that we have here in the ATL?
One of the tricks is there's probably over 10,000 different wines that are imported into the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And it's having the relationship with the vintners all over the world. And being able to call on those relationships and just the tasting. I've been tasting
thousands of wines a year for 15 years.
So your selection is above and beyond, and you have, according to your some information here, you educated staff as well.
Yeah, one of the tricks about wine education is wine can be very intimidating to a lot of people. And we try to make that intimidation factor non-existent. We really try to give an environment for the staff and the general public mm-hmm. who comes in and dines with us mm-hmm. to have a great experience with some maybe wine you've never heard of, but might be a great bang for the dollar.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to say I'm one of those inexperienced wine people. I would not know where to begin when I came there, and hopefully I would have to rely on some of your staff members to guide me to what would be my best choice for a first-time wine drink or first time.
You know. Ryan, you just think red or white, right? So there's only two? There's 10,000?
Yeah.
Well, one of the great things we've done in the last couple of months is we've introduced flights, wine flights.
What is that?
The wine flights are, you basically get three-ounce pours of whatever different wines are.
Okay.
So let's say we want to explore northern Italy.
Okay.
You get three-ounce pours of iconic Barolo producers, some legends in their industry, mm-hmm. their three wines. Or we've right now, for the holidays and New Year's, we have bubbles flights. So it's three different bubbles. You've Lambrusco from outside of Rome. You've got a Cava outside of Barcelona from Spain. Mm-hmm. And then you have Champagne from France.
Has that been popular, received well by the
Absolutely.
Patrons there? Good.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of wine education, but not in a very stuffy way. It's really mm-hmm. just trying at your own pace, not intimidating. We can mm-hmm. talk to you as much as you want or leave you alone as much as you want.
Well, try 10,000 wines at 3 ounces at a time. Might take you a while, but we'll get there.
Exactly.
And coming up, New Year's Eve, I understand you have a special package for your guests. Tell us about that.
Yeah, New Year's Eve is I've always drank bubbles. My first gig in the business was Windows of the World, which was on top of the World Trade Center. And Andrea Emery, who was my boss and main educator up there, was the first female to pass the Master Sommelier exam in the U.S. And she loved bubbles. She said, never start a meal without it. So for New Year's, we always did bubbles. Mm-hmm. And I've drank bubbles every New Year's and hoping to share that experience with a lot of people New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. And anything else going on at the restaurant that New Year's Eve?
New Year's Eve, it's a prefix, $70 a person. Okay. If two people book, we give you a bottle of Cava on us.
All right.
And it's a great multi-course dinner. One of the fascinations I love is chocolate truffles.
Mm-hmm.
And we do some fun truffles, champagne truffles at the bar.
So New Year's Eve, you got dinner, bottle of wine, fun atmosphere.
Absolutely.
A bunch of wine lovers getting together and hanging out.
Pretty much.
All right. Ringing in the bottles. New Year. Sounds good to me.
So bubbles, that's different than champagne, right? Or?
Well, the champagne is it's a controlled origin in France.
Yeah,
it's
only in France, yeah.
Next time you're in Paris, it's about 85 kilometers outside of Paris. It's an easy day trip. It's beautiful. But it's that one area in France is called champagne.
Champagne, yeah.
Everywhere else is called bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In Germany, it's called Sekt. Mm-hmm. Other places called Cava in Spain. It's really, you can get bubbles anywhere.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so we talked about New Year's Eve. What about space for private parties, birthdays?
We've got a wine room where we keep most of our reds. Uh-huh. And it's most of our dessert wines. In the wine room, it's a farm table for 14. We also do, Sunday we had a birthday party right after we did after brunch, and it was great.
So you can just sit there in the wine room and at the table, and when you guys aren't looking, just grab another bottle off the rack there.
Pretty much. There was a party in there for the Iron Bowl.
Oh, really?
We have a television in there. They put the football on and just drank a whole lot of wine, had some great food, and then watched the Iron Bowl.
You got to love that, running up the tab, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and also the
especially
beer.
If their team's winning, whatever,
And also the beer. We're very lucky in Georgia and Atlanta that we have some great craft brews. We got Monday Night, Wrecking Bar, Three Taverns. So all of our taps are always will always be local. Mm-hmm. We're getting some cooler porters and stouts on now. Now it's getting a little colder.
Yeah. Speaking of local, what about any local vineyards that catch your eye? Or mentioned 10,000 imported.
I'm always tasting. I'm always tasting. We do a lot of our bar focuses about 70% on Old World.
Right. Yeah.
So we do some New Worlds. I'm tasting through the Georgia wines now, and the wine kind of is beautiful up there.
What are some vineyards that come to mind? Up that way, or you can't say or whatever. Yeah, you can pass or play on that question.
No, it's just
then
I'm
you're
not,
playing favorites. Oh, you're just
I'm
starting.
I'm just starting out,
just scouting that. Yeah,
I'm just scouting out now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll probably in the spring I'll go up there.
Okay.
Let us know. We'll travel along with you and we'll help scout out some of the wineries.
Yeah. We're always looking for a free deal here. Or whatever. Yeah. So all right. So so how do you select? I mean, you mentioned 10,000. I mean, what's the selection process? I mean, how do you go about determining which ones to incorporate?
Well, the oldest trick in the book for sommeliers is doing light body. So light-bodied wine, medium-bodied wine, and full-bodied.
Okay.
And there are certain, throughout the world and throughout the U.S., there's categories of wine that light, medium, full. And then if you want a Pinot Grigio, you taste a lot of different Pinot Grigios. Over the course of time, I've tasted a lot of Pinot Grigios. So whatever's good for that price category, if you want a $12 bottle, what's the best bang you can get for that $12?
I mean, can you mention some of your favorites? You mentioned on the Pinots?
Yeah, Pinot Noir. There's we have on tap right now, we've got Melville. Great producer out of Santa Maria Valley in California. Great producer. Right now we've got a Lambrusco out of what I talked about out of Rome.
Right.
It's an amazing producer. Small, non-dosage, very dry. Champagne, Laurent Perrier. Mm-hmm. Beautiful champagne house. That on glass. The Barolo. Barolo Contorno. Barolo is always expensive. It's always in the mid-hundreds.
Right.
But they do a Langhe Rosso that's $20.
Right.
Very so finding those great wines.
Yeah,
I'm much like Ryan. I enjoy wine, but I don't know a whole lot about it. Right, mm-hmm. But I was at some fancy place a while back, and I mean, we can kind of speak to this, but they said, you know, the glass itself is part of the component or the experience, whatever. Right,
and absolutely.
They mentioned a certain brand that was a very expensive glass. You probably know, but I mean, how does the glass come into play? I mean, what is
And we use the
I just grab one out of the kitchen sink. That's not
as long as there's no odor. As long as it's odorless glass.
Okay.
And you want it because there's a very big discussion in the champagne world of do you use a champagne flute or a regular white wine glass?
Yeah.
The champagne flutes don't give you the aromas that some of the new boutique small grower champagnes can give you out of a small flute. So we use a white wine glass for champagne.
Yeah.
Some people think it's a little odd.
Right.
But people have kind of grown up, kind of geared up to that.
Right. Like you said at the beginning, I mean, it's really up to kind of personal taste. There's no really right or wrongs here or whatever, right?
Absolutely not.
But and I won't ask you this question. I'm sure you get, you know, what's your favorite wine, right? I mean, not to ask you that because that's like, you know, how can you answer that? But talk to us about, you know, three wines you might recommend for a holiday dinner for our listeners thinking I got to grab some wine. What are some go-to or pointers or tips?
I mean, go-to for me for a holiday party is always start with bubbles. Okay. Whether it be a great Loire Valley bubble or a champagne, it's tough to go wrong with bubbles. Mm-hmm. The other is a Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir has been hot for a long time, and it is a great wine. Pinot Noir from Oregon, California. There's some cool stuff coming out of North Fork out of Long Island. And always Burgundy is the Grand Master if you want to spend the money.
Yeah.
Burgundy is always going to be my love.
Right.
It's the downfall of my wallet as well.
Right, yeah. Well, you get your wine free there, don't you?
Yeah, nothing's free.
Nothing's free.
Right. Nothing's free.
Yes, yeah, that's a great kind of tip. Go to a party or an event, bring bubbles. It just feels more like a celebration or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. And the great thing I was always told is that one of the great things to do on a Friday night, rent a movie, butter popcorn, and champagne.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll add that to my list, whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we have some time for some open questions here, so we'll in just a moment get your pen and paper handy. I got some questions and some thoughts for our panel. But so, Ian, tell our listeners, again, the location, best way to get in touch and find out about what's going on.
Okay, we're Vine and Tap, Gestra Wine Pub in Buckhead. We're at 2770 Lennox Road, right across from Roasters. And we can get the phone number is 404-600-5820 or on the web at vineandtapatl.com.
Nice. And I see Excellent. You have there as well, you have the Twitter handle and the Facebook and all that good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you.
And, but you brought you said you had some samples or some demo or some props or something. Yeah. I don't think we can.
Not on the radio now.
Well, we can pour these. It's internet radio, so we're
sure,
good.
Why not?
Whatever.
Yeah, FCC regulations here.
We don't have another show till 2 o'clock, so we're good. Yeah, just around for everybody. But
the first one I brought is the Lambrusco.
Okay.
It's a bubble from outside of Rome. It's one of the first DOCGs in Italy.
Mm-hmm. What's a DOCG?
It's a legalized version of what can be in the area.
Wow, okay.
Pretty much. The other is a Chianti that we do quite well. The amazing thing about this Chianti is that it's from a Brunello producer, so one of the top areas in Tuscany, just south of Siena. But because of legalities, you can only have Brunello from 400 meters to 600 meters.
Away from each other or something? Or
elevation. This Chianti is from the 601 to 608 meter elevation.
I thought you had
so
to
you're basically getting Brunello.
400 meters away from each other before drinking.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's. If anybody has any questions, we'll kind of open discussion. Don?
Well, you asked a question, Rich, about the industries that are densely populated by family businesses. Most of the food in this country is produced by family business
farms.
Mm-hmm. And Ian can testify that most of the vineyards are family businesses, mm-hmm. generational family businesses in Europe especially, and out in California as well. And Jane can attest to that as a nonprofit, much of the support for organizations such as the Children's Museum comes from wealth or family business, family foundations. Yeah. I think that's true. Is that true?
We get a significant amount of support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask Jane, along that line, so how do people find out about you typically or whatever? You know, that they know that you exist, and are there programs in schools or whatever, or with parents' organizations? Or
we try to be everywhere all the time, but we have a website. We have, there are the typical PR articles that are written. We do things like this. We're in schools. We're in festivals, community festivals.
Okay.
We do everything we can. We have blogs. We have parent blogs and
a lot of online content.
A lot of online content. And we even have workshops. Sometimes they're geared for parents and teachers. So we're doing a lot of outreach in our community, taking a lot of programs out into the community.
So with some of the schools or organizations, do you have like groups come in or a group experience?
Yes. Schools will come in through a field trip experience. Yeah. So the bus pulls up.
Right.
And in the museum, we have a troupe of professional actors/educators. And they perform. They take the kids on a real educational field trip experience. It's very engaging, very interactive.
Yeah, we didn't have too many field trips growing up as kids. We like you can go to recess, and then your field trip is on the other side of the playground later that week. So, Johnny, I was thinking, as Don was talking about family businesses, so I'd be interested in maybe discussion with the two of y'all as well, but like, what's the upside from your experience? I mean, you're kind of born into it. You've never really known anything different, but I mean, over the years, what do you see as like the upside, the advantage, and then what's the challenges? I mean, you've experienced...
I think the biggest thing is you're getting the experience. So you have somebody that's been seasoned, to sort of pass down that information, because in our industries, especially with Ian, and you sort of learn at a financial mistake. So it's something that you need to be educated on what you're doing, what you're serving. Obviously, we're handling food, and you really got to be precise on the cleanliness of the business, and to look out for people's well-being. So. I think this table today is pretty unique because a lot of us are sort of entertaining and educating and really, reaching out to a lot of people. So I think that's sort of what it's all about, and people can sort of learn from, everyone's experiences and their business to strive to be better, because that's what keeps the economy going. So, you definitely have to entertain, you obviously have to educate, and you obviously have to... build them up from small people. So, it's definitely a process of growth. So,
but not to put you on the spot, but like challenges, I'm just thinking of family dynamics, right? I mean, it's not all, rosy and rainbows and right. I mean, there's times you're thinking
a lot of challenges,
right? I mean, what a couple that come to mind, not to put any, don't name any names or anything. Yeah. speaking of family, any other family members involved in the business now?
No, myself.
Just passed down to you.
Yeah, my family's down in South Florida. So,
any kids going to take over from here? Or,
We're talking kids. Yeah, but
You really put them on the spot
on the
there.
Spot. Yeah, exactly.
Spot,
yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's why...
My wife. But we were actually planning on moving to Florida, and this project sort of fell into our lap. So I was ready to head back to West Palm Beach.
So you still have family in Cocoa Beach, I guess? Or
Cocoa Beach and West Palm Beach is where my family is now, yes.
Yeah. So certainly anybody else can jump in with questions, but maybe just a roundtable as well. What the thoughts, plans for 2015? What do you guys – well, actually, before I do that, I did have a kind of follow-up question for Don. We kind of talked in big picture kind of stuff, but what about, on a day-to-day basis with your business? What types of the services or resources? I mean, how to obviously, your website has a lot of content and information on there, but – do you consult with people on an individual basis or offer, links and sources? Or, what's...
Yes.
Who writes you checks, basically? I guess what I'm asking.
No, we're a consulting firm.
Okay, right.
And we generate revenue from our consulting services.
Okay. So families, businesses hire you guys?
Family business. Our three main focuses is to be able to help family businesses grow.
Right.
Typically, family businesses do a very poor job of promoting themselves. They operate in plain sight.
Right.
And without promotion, you know, a business, you know, only one thing happens with the business, nothing. We help keep family relationships on an even keel, healthy family relationships.
A lot of therapy, probably have therapists on call, whatever. Yeah.
And then the third is the when the time is right to help transition that business from one generation to the next.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like family. You see the undercover boss, right? You see those episodes, and that's interesting when the family's involved and you send in that person. But so let's kind of wrap up. So we'll kind of go in reverse order. Ian, thoughts for 2015 or...
We're excited about 2015. 2014, we're excited about our first year anniversary on February 14th.
Right, yeah. Big party there. It's a built-in party, right?
Built-in party.
No doubt.
The wife and kids will definitely have a babysitter that night.
Nice.
And then we're talking about doing some exciting things for lunch that are in the works.
Cool. Don, your thoughts for 2015?
Well, again, coming back to our website, we have an Ask the Expert feature.
Okay.
Excellent. And invite people to come in. It doesn't cost anything. And we say that without a good question, a good answer has no place to go.
I think that's a good name for a radio show. Ask the Expert radio show, tuning in at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Yeah. Oh,
good job.
All right. Yeah. We'll talk about that. Yeah. Okay. So, Jane, 2015.
I'm looking particularly forward to a new exhibit we're bringing at the very beginning of February called Super Kids Save the World. It is, if your kids want to save the world, which most do, they can do it, learn how to do it. It's an environmental exhibit. So there's a lot of recycling, reusing, thinking about how to use our resources well.
I know, Ryan, give me permission. We're a little over time, but I did two thoughts for you, for speaking of kids and saving the world, or changing the world. There was a thing on CNN. They just had like the 2014 Heroes Award. There was a kid on there from Detroit, like a little 9-year-old girl. And she's out there like selling all kinds of stuff, making all kinds of money and contributing to good causes. And I mean, just a powerful story when you see of somebody that age and just taking it on in a city that everybody had kind of thrown in the towel with her, right? And just her outlook was inspiring.
I actually have a collection of inventions that were created by young children, and they are surprising.
That is cool.
Well, speaking of inventions, we may have to connect you. There's a gentleman that was on the show a couple weeks ago, the Kids Business Expo.
Yes.
It's coming in Atlanta, and he was on the show. And
in February.
Yeah, we're going to put you in touch with him. I'm trying to think.
Dirk
was his name. But great idea. It's kind of like the entire event is only kids, and they have their own widget or their own gizmo they're bringing to the market at the table as exhibitors, right? Their parents are really not involved other than just chaperoning, but they give their pitch and the whole nine yards, and they, you know, there's an interesting tie in there, yeah. So, Johnny, thoughts for 2015?
2015, just excited to be a part of the new growth in Buckhead, the new shopping, and really excited about taking on this ride and growing this brand and getting multiple locations.
I mean, you timed it right.
Yeah.
So the big VIP tomorrow, and then when do you guys officially open the doors?
It'll be Thursday.
Thursday, okay.
Correct.
And the singer, you're bringing in?
Chris Cawley from The Voice and Wesley Cook.
His wife or fiancée was in our studio, Sandra.
She's Miss America,
Georgia.
Miss Georgia.
That's right. For Simply Buckhead Radio 2 p.m. show. She was a guest just recently.
Cool. And I do want to give a shout-out to the Reynolds Group.
Hello, Reynolds Group.
Thank you so much for all your talents, and looking forward to
very awesome.
Yeah,
tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. All right. So Rich Casanova and you are, what's your name again?
Ryan McPherson.
Thanks for being here, Ryan. Great show. We'll see you all next time on the radio for Simply Buckhead at 2 o'clock and Buckhead Business Radio X every Tuesday at 10.